The views and comments expressed on the Space Show by its guests, callers, and listeners belong to them. The Space Show and its hosts serve only as a platform and are not responsible for others' comments or views. All topics discussed on the Space Show are primarily for educational purposes.
We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other thing.
It's the Space Show with Dr. David Livingston, broadcasting to seven continents, consistently bringing you quality news and interviews with the best and brightest minds in the new space economy. Here is the founder and host of the Space Show, the man who best articulates the vision of space commercial enterprise, Dr. David Livingston.
Good morning, listeners. Welcome to our Friday morning California time Space Show program. I am your host, David Livingston. Thank you for tuning in. We'll get to our program in just a minute, but first a couple of special announcements. We're on the 60-minute format today, so please do watch your clocks. And if you have comments or questions for our guest, who I will introduce in just a minute, please do get them in before we sign off. So again, remember today, Friday, we're on the 60-minute format. And then another announcement I want to make is that this Sunday, September 23rd, Rod and Randa Milliron of Inner Orbital are our guests. Now, many of you are always asking what's new with Inner Orbital. They have quite a following, and they've actually been flying some rockets out there near Mojave. So they are on the show Sunday. So if you're one of those who follows and likes Interorbital and wants to know the latest news, both Rod and Randa are with us on this Sunday. And then another announcement is this Tuesday is a special open lines program. So normally we do open lines on Sunday. We are going back to an old standard used several years ago, and we're going to see how open lines works for Tuesday, 7 p.m. California time. So that's Tuesday, September 25th. If you want to talk about whatever is on your mind, Tuesday night will be an opportunity for you to do that. And then Sunday, Dan Adamo is back on the show talking about telecommunication with low latency aspects for Mars as well as elsewhere in the solar system. And he has a special PDF document for the Space Show, which I've already uploaded to the blog. His upcoming show page has already been created. So in advance of his program on Sunday, September 30th, it'd be really great if you could look over his PDF. That would make your listening more informed. And then, of course, if you have comments or questions for Dan, they would be more to the point if you reviewed his PDF document. So that is all available for you as of today. And then one final note, Monday, September 24th, Susan Jewell is on, and she's with the Mars Academy USA. I talked to her at length at the Mars Society meeting in Pasadena a few weeks ago. And there are also documents and a flyer and information uploaded to the upcoming page, blog page, for Susan Jewell on Monday. So in advance of her program on Monday, you should check out all of the uploads and the URLs that we have posted there for additional information and her flyer for announcing new Mars Academy USA programs that are upcoming. So all of that is already available on the blog. And then again today with Megan Crawford, we're doing the 60-minute program. So for those of you that can use the toll-free number today, I know many of you do listen at work on Friday morning. The number is 1-866-687-7223. You can also send us email at drspace@thespaceshow.com. And you can also post a note on our blog, which is thespaceshow.com, all the way over to that far right upcoming show menu I was just referring to. The first program listed is today's program with Megan Crawford. Open it up. That is our blog page. So all the way down at the bottom, you can post a comment. You do not have to be logged in to discuss to do that. You can use it as a guest, which is what I always do because I'm lazy. And as soon as you post your question or comment, I'll get a copy of it and can integrate it into the program. But the preferred way, of course, is the phone if you have access to it Friday morning, 1-866-687-7223. We will post the new website newsletter Sunday after the Sunday program, but the one that is currently on our website shows all the programming for this week in detail. Plus, it has all of the upcoming shows listed. We're booking into the end of the year, and we've added several new additional programs during the week. So when I post the website newsletter Sunday afternoon, it will be even more updated and current through the end of the year than what we have right now. And then if you want the email version of the newsletter sent to you, it goes out at 6 a.m. California time Monday morning. Just make sure I have your email address. Everything we do is archived. You can listen right off of the website or easily download the shows. There's a store in the upper left-hand menu under support if you're interested in memorabilia and logo wear. And there's also a listen live button in that upper left menu. So this tells you how to listen to live shows, how to listen to compressed MP3s as archives, and podcast, including Alexa. So please share this information with people that are interested in space or the space show. And if you have any questions, don't hesitate to email me, drspace@thespaceshow.com. To me, the most important information on the website is about supporting us. We are a nonprofit 501c3 with OneGiantLeapFoundation.org. And your support does keep the space show on the air. So check us out. If you're a federal U.S. taxpayer, you do get a tax deduction for your gift. The same is true for California taxpayers. And if you have any questions, don't hesitate to email me at drspace@thespaceshow.com. But in all seriousness, your support does keep us going. We are a listener-supported show, and we thank you very much for your support. We do also have sponsors. They get banner ads running across our homepage, and they can change that banner ad whenever they want. You'll see them when you go to our website. And on regular length shows, I read a PR message from each of our sponsors during the program. On the shorter versions of the shows, like I'm doing today, I just thank our sponsors. So again, I do want to thank Northrop Grumman, the AIAA, Celestis, the Space Development Network, the National Space Society, the Integrated Space Plan, and the Space Foundation. Their sponsorship is key to us and to all of the listeners as well. We're deeply appreciative of their support. And check out their banner ads and click on them and see what their messages are underneath those banner ads. And thanks for supporting our sponsors. So our program today is going to feature the New Space Business Plan competition, which we cover all the time on the Space Show. Megan Crawford is with us today, and she, of course, has been on many times before. She is a co-founder and board member for the Center for Space, Commerce, and Finance, which is an educational nonprofit whose mission is to catalyze commercial activity that supports the industrialization, exploration, and settlement of space. Megan herself is a very successful entrepreneur, having sold her first company before the age of 30, and she is now a startup coach and a mentor for a new wave of space entrepreneurs. You should read her full bio. It is on our website. She's very involved in the space industry, as you will see, and we're really happy to have her back. Now, the website for the business plan competition and the Center for Space Commerce and Finance is www.C as in Charlie, S as in Sam, C as in Charlie, F as in Frank, .space. So pull that one up. And Megan, welcome back to the Space Show. How are you?
Great. Thank you for having me, David. Always great to be here. I'm very excited to talk about the business plan competition, as always, and thanks for having me on.
So tell us about business plan competition for 2018.
Yep. So we have been running New Space Business Plan competitions. This is our 9th year, so almost a decade. Next year we'll do some kind of anniversary celebrations. And our current competition that we're recruiting competitors for is being held in November, November 9th and 10th, as part of the New Worlds Conference in Austin, Texas. We're currently recruiting competitors right now to go into our preliminary judging process, and we will select 6 finalists to present their business plans on stage in front of a large audience, including a group of some of the most notable space investors in the world right now as judges. And it's a really fun and great opportunity for businesses to get the word out and learn about fundraising and really get some practice presenting their company in that way. And it's also a great educational program for the entrepreneurs and something that we find the investors and judges really looking forward to as one of the highlights of their year as well. So we kind of have a good time all the way around, and it's a really beneficial program for anybody who participates.
Okay, so for people who may want to participate in the business plan competition November 9th in Austin. And the New Worlds is part of the Austin State Fair, as I recall, and the audience is huge for all of this. So it's a pretty cool venue, people. So how do you participate? How do you submit a business plan? What do you need to do?
That's a great question. So in the interest of everybody's time and sanity, we don't require an entire business plan. We just need your executive summary. So that's usually quite a bit easier to put together and put a nice polish on. We do have a 3-page limit on that executive summary. So describe your business in that 3 pages and submit it to us online through our website. And that's all you need to participate. So we try to keep that bar pretty low so that we can get as many people and as many ideas into the competition as possible.
So does the executive summary have to meet any requirements for you, or it's just a standard business plan executive summary and then it's automatically entered and considered by the judges?
Yeah, we just ask for it to be in a Word document or PDF file when you submit it online. We do have some really great blog posts up on the website that talk about what makes a good executive summary and what specifically the judging criteria are that we're looking for. And I'm happy to go into those in quite a bit more detail as we get into this. But I would highly recommend, you know, reading over those. Because the more you're in line with the judging criteria, obviously, the better judging scores you'll get. So we try to be as transparent as possible about all of that and, again, give everybody the best possible chance to get their idea heard.
Is there a fee to enter?
There's no fee to enter. We don't charge our entrants anything. If they do get selected to attend the event in Austin, they'll be required to cover their own travel expenses, but then, we'll take care of everything else.
Okay, so just three pages or less and click send, right?
Yeah, it's very simple. There is a short form to fill out just entering your contact information and saying that you've read and agreed to the rules, kind of a couple clicks there. Upload your document and hit send and you're ready to go.
Does the business plan have to deal with a business to take place in space? Does it have like an in-space requirement, or can it be an earthly terrestrial business that maybe is related to space? How do you get the space connection?
That's a great question. So obviously anything that is occurring in space automatically qualifies for the competition. But we also focus very heavily on what we call space scalable. So these are companies, ideas, or products that maybe have a terrestrial market right now, but will also be useful in space. Some great examples of this where we've seen some really interesting stuff happening lately would be closed system farming technology. That's something that there's been a ton of innovation on a terrestrial level on, closed system farming and aquaponics and hydroponics. Obviously, that same technology is very important for long-term human settlement in space. On a much kind of simpler or more boring level, things like nanomaterials and carbon nanotubes and things that medical devices that can help us remotely keep track of an astronaut's health. So there's kind of a ton of examples here of technologies or products that were created for a terrestrial market but also have an important application in space. And we love to have those companies come into the space world and learn about a new market for their product. And then also, at the same time, introducing that product to the space industry that may fill a hole for them. So you know, it does need to have a space aspect to it, but it doesn't have to be a product or service that occurs in space at the moment.
Do you have any limits on how much money the business plan needs to raise to implement the business plan? Like, are you talking about small activities, say, under $1 million, or if somebody wanted to raise $100 million, would that still be eligible?
Absolutely. So what we're most interested in is kind of the stage of company development. To us, that's much more important than the size of the company, the number of employees, or the size of the round they're trying to raise. We're interested in companies that are early stage, seed round, or Series A, that are, you know, kind of just getting their feet under them, that are going out to fundraise for the first or second time. Now, like I said, the amount of fundraising is much less relevant than it is those early stage companies that are looking for initial investors are the ones that we find get the most value out of the competition.
So I hear from people that I interview on the space show all the time, and they claim they have a company. I'm not doing any due diligence one way or the other. I mean, that's not my goal when I do the show for the most part. But it sounds like their business venture that they have created for their idea is a one-person shop. So is there any requirement to not be a one-person operation, but to actually have the makings of a viable company, or do you care if it's a one-person show?
A one-person show oftentimes is just fine, especially if they're going out to raise a seed round so that they can hire people to fill out the team, right? So that's very reasonable. One thing that we do find with kind of the one-person shops or the smaller idea stage companies is that maybe they've done a great job at developing a piece of technology or an idea, but maybe haven't thought through all of the business side, manufacturing, production, distribution. So with those smaller organizations, we do recommend that they really take some time to kind of think through more than just the idea itself, but the actual business aspect. And if you've got a good handle on that and know who you need to hire to fill out your team, then that company would be just as a legitimate competitor as anybody else.
So you have a question from Linda, who is in Seattle. And Linda says, in the past, your organization has had training on how to make the presentations and be competitive. Do you still do that for the contestants?
Absolutely. That's a great question, and definitely something I wanted a chance to talk about. So thank you very much for sending that in. The day before the competition, we do a boot camp. So we like to think of this as kind of a mini accelerator where we spend the day with the teams and really get, you know, kind of run them through the ringer and make sure they're getting really good at that presentation. We will do some online conference calls with them leading up to the competition to kind of get the presentation in the right format and the right length. And then during that in-person boot camp session the day before, we really perfect those pitches. And then we also have a lot of guest speakers that come in and do a few short mini classes, things like, law and politics and the specifics of operating a business in the space industry and what you need to be aware of. We have a great attorney who really helps with that and patent discussions and things like that. We'll have people come in and talk about marketing or human resources and really help these competitors, get a leg up on kind of that early work that needs to be done to build a viable business, as well as getting them ready to make that pitch in the best possible way and getting them some practice answering some hard questions so that they're not too nervous when the judges come at them with those questions during the competition. So That's one of the most valuable parts to the competitors. We consistently get feedback from them that that day-long boot camp is one of the most valuable experiences that they've had in putting their business together.
Roger's in Tucson, and he says, what do you win if you're the winner?
Ah, great question. So we currently have two cash prizes that are confirmed. We are a 501c3 nonprofit as well, and we rely on our sponsorships, our sponsors, to give out prizes. And we currently have a $2,500 prize for the first place contestant, granted to us by the Heinlein Prize Trust. They're a long time and continuous supporter of us. And then we have a $1,000 Audience Choice Award. And the audience will, you know, vote on who gets that that $1,000 award. So we do have two prizes for this competition, and we're excited about that.
Who sponsors the Audience Choice Award?
That's a combination of a, you know, kind of out of a general pool of sponsors. Some of our other sponsors include SSL, Space Systems Loral, Brandel TV, and, you know, a couple of other organizations in the industry that, that partner with us and work with us on various projects.
So here's another one for you. Larry is in Santa Fe, New Mexico, and he says, do you ever do follow-up with the winners or the second-place winners to see if they actually start their company and what happens to them?
Yes. You know, this is something that that we're doing more and more of as we have more years under our belt, and some of these companies who competed in the early years maybe have had some good successes. One example of this would be Spire. They weren't actually called Spire yet. They had a different name when they competed at the business plan competition, but it's the same team, and obviously they've been incredibly successful. Generation Orbit, the Go Launcher team, is another great example of a previous competitor who's gone on to be very successful. And of course, there are many others who are in kind of various levels of development and have reached various levels of success as well.
And You used to, as I recall, so I'm a little confused, so let me get the confusion out of my mind so I can ask the question properly. You used to, at various different space conferences, have like a regional competition that would, the winners of the regional would then flow over into the big final competition at something like New World. So that format has been changed, correct?
Yeah, we're currently doing the regional events a couple of times a year in conjunction with different space conferences. Like you said, we found that that's the best format for us to get to the most competitors, get the most people into the program involved and educated, is by doing the competitions at, you know, kind of multiple locations throughout the year and really focusing on building those regional audiences as we go.
So do those regional winners automatically roll over into the big competition, or the regional is now separate from the one we're talking about?
So we're not doing a final competition right now. That is something that we're working on developing in the coming years, so that we could put a system like that together. But right now we're just focusing on those regional competitions in conjunction with the existing conferences.
So you mentioned early on that you've been doing this for 9 years.
Yeah.
I remember when this was started. How have you seen the progression of quality and variation in new kinds of space businesses come about? Are you seeing really rapid changes in how people are seeing commercial space businesses and opportunities? Is it a rapidly moving, changing world, or is it kind of just going along, muddling along from year to year?
And that's an absolutely wonderful question. So we have seen every year an increase in the number of people who apply, and that's growing at a pretty significant rate. For example, in 2009, I believe we had 14 or 15 applications. And in a typical call for competitors in 2017, 2018, we'd get 60 to 100. So there's been definitely a significant, and we are doing those call for competitors multiple times a year now. So, you know, sometimes some years 150 or 200 competitors come through our program. So we have seen a huge increase in the numbers. and then also a significant increase in the quality over time as well as the industry has developed. As the companies become more serious, as more market opportunities have opened up, we've seen more and exciting and new and different types of companies. And then what's also really exciting for us is seeing the change on the other side of this, from the audience perspective, from the judge's perspective. As the space industry has really taken off, we find bigger audiences that are more engaged in learning. We find more and more qualified judges, experienced space investors, which is all great signs for the industry.
Are you finding when people present their business plans and those that have hiring and maybe they actually list their employees, are you finding a pool of space business experienced people to work in these companies, or is that still in short supply, and so you find similar experiences in terrestrial businesses?
So, yeah, there is definitely a short supply of people who have experience in this industry. Because it's new, because it's growing so rapidly, I think that a lot of companies, and certainly a lot of the teams that we see, are teams of people that have come from multiple different industries. And you'll find that there's specific skill sets like accounting, that it doesn't matter really which industry you've worked in. Accounting practices are accounting practices, and that transfers perfectly. So I think there is definitely a shortness of experienced space engineers. I know that the universities are pumping these guys out as fast as they can. If somebody who's listening is in university or about to go to university and wants to know what kind of job to get, I would say get a space engineering degree, because those guys are finding jobs as quicker than just about anybody else right now. But yeah, there's definitely a short.
We lost her, so let me see if I can call her back. And you guys stand by. I'll put some music on, but we'll be right back.
The Space Show thanks its listeners for their generous support. The Space Show now joins forces with the One Giant Leap Foundation to further advance space education and the establishment of a spacefaring society and culture in America and the world. One Giant Leap Foundation is a tax-exempt organization with the purpose of advancing space education and development along with the Space Show. Your support of the Space Show and One Giant Leap Foundation helps get the word out as to why space is so essential and important to us all. So join with us by going to www.thespaceshow.com and clicking on the Support the Space Show button. Your contribution will help the Space Show and One Giant Leap Foundation in continuing its work and bringing you the programming you want free of charge on a continued basis. And remember, your gift to the Space Show is tax deductible.
Listeners, welcome back. I have Megan back on the telephone after a little bit of an interruption. Do you remember where we were, Megan?
We were talking about shortage of personnel.
Right, and aerospace engineers seem to have a lock on good careers, right?
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
That implies you got to know some math.
Most likely, I'm sure. Some calculus, yeah.
Do you think that that this difficulty with not having a lot of experienced people? And this is an issue that needs to, be overcome over years. Is it a big handicap to the space companies as they create their business plans and move forward, or is it being handled okay? How do you see that as a possible limitation or handicap problem?
You know, I don't see it as a significant handicap. In fact, it's pretty normal in any industry that's new and growing rapidly. You've got to pull in experience from other industries and a lot of business functions within a company. That experience in different industries can be just as valuable. Where I do see problems is when people don't realize that they need additional experience. They say, well, me and my three space engineering buddies can handle this. No, the reality is you need a finance guy and you need a marketing person. You need a this person and a that person. And if that means you have to pull people out of other industries, that's only going to make your company stronger in the long run. So I don't think it's a handicap at all. I think that we just need, you know, as an industry, be more willing to look into those other industries for the talent that we need.
You have a note from Todd in San Diego. Are you seeing any business plans coming in for human spaceflight of any type?
So we have seen human spaceflight plans before. Not many of them. Most of the people who are doing human-level spaceflight, they typically have deep pockets and maybe don't necessarily need to go for outside funding. but we have seen some programs that, even though maybe it's not human space launch, maybe it's setting things up in free space or other locations for future human settlement. So we have definitely seen such projects come through.
Another one is from Carrie, spelled C-A-R-R-I-E, and it just says Ohio. And Carrie says, I'm learning to make films and have in mind a documentary space film. Does that qualify for the business plan competition?
If there's a business plan for it, if there's a distribution plan, a marketing plan, and revenue potential, then absolutely it would qualify.
But not just to make the film itself. There needs to be
right.
a business to distribute and promote the film.
Correct. And that's a key thing that, in fact, one of our judges and longtime supporters, a woman named Letitia Garriott, she actually mentioned in the introduction to the business plan competition at New Worlds last year, this is not an idea competition. And it's likely that the best idea is not the thing that's going to win. This is fundamentally a business plan competition being judged by investors. So they're looking for specifically a plan to create a business that provides a return on investment to the people who put the money in up front. And so the ideas are great, and we see a lot of amazing ideas, but people maybe haven't wrapped that business aspect around the idea yet. And, you know, when we get those submissions, of course, we'd like to provide feedback to help people do that. But yeah, what we're really looking for is a business plan that shows a, you know, an investment that turns into a larger amount of capital through some process of business.
So you mentioned ROI. So if someone has an idea and wants to implement it through a 501c3, which is not really a commercial business, would that not be okay, or would there be a category for that?
Yeah, so we don't deal with nonprofits. These are for-profit businesses, and exactly for that reason, because it is a business plan competition. It is a group of investors that are judging the competition, and their investors are looking for one thing, return on investment, right? That's the whole point of being an investor. So.
Oh, such a dirty word, capitalism.
I know.
Megan, I don't know. Maybe you should have a category for the best socialist businesses that redistribute the profit to everybody. What do you think?
That's a different competition, maybe. We'll look into it.
It seems to be gaining support. I don't know what economic schools people go to, if any, but what about international entry? So we have a lot of listeners, for example, in Australia and in Canada and in England and throughout Europe and gaining in Asia, but mostly in the English-speaking world, of course. Can people in another country enter the plan?
Absolutely. We love to have international competitors, and that's one of the things I'm so excited about in the industry right now is the international growth in new spaces just exploding. And, you know, because of that, we're actually looking at doing our first international competition in 2019 in conjunction with the New Space Europe Conference in Luxembourg. We weren't able to get it arranged for this year, but we're hoping to do a European competition in 2019 to access some, you know, kind of a wider market. But in the meantime, anybody who wants to compete this year, of course, as I mentioned earlier in the program, you have to cover your own travel costs. But if you're happy to make it to Austin, we would love to consider you as a competitor.
Is there a separate category for international, or they're mixed in with everybody else?
They're mixed in with everybody else right now, yeah.
Okay. Do you at all see that there have been, or I'm sure you see them, what would you say have been the sort of catalyst over the years that have triggered these opportunities? As if I were doing this as multiple choice, I would say like SpaceX, number one, Elon Musk promotional activities, two. I mean, have there been triggers that have really made all of these changes possible? Maybe the COTS program, for example, that sort of kicked a lot of this stuff off. What would you say were the leading factors that really changed the playing field?
You know, from our perspective, although, you know, I agree with all of the things mentioned, from our perspective, there's been really probably two important things. One was, of course, access, right? And that's only getting better over time. And, you know, the cheaper and more frequent access is to space, the more business and opportunity you see in space. So, yeah, that's kind of a direct one-to-one relationship that's been vital to getting the industry off the ground. And then for us, the thing that's really, really kicked this off, that's really changed the industry over the last decade that we've been watching it so closely, is, you know, for lack of a better terminology, a Silicon Valley mindset. Small, nimble companies that are inexpensive to set up, that can capitalize on a near-term market opportunity. And you saw this a lot with kind of the initiation of the Planet Labs and a few of the other big companies that have kind of come out of that mindset and that thinking. I think that drastically changed the industry. The ability to do things on a small and inexpensive scale opens up a world of possibilities to entrepreneurs that didn't exist before when satellites were multi-billion-dollar operations that were the size of school buses, right?
Uh-huh. So
that ability to do things small, quick, and cheap is really, in our minds, the catalyst that's brought a lot of this forward.
Wasn't that an NASA motto about 10 years ago?
It may have been.
No, it was. I forget the exact terminology for their missions. They were basically small, quick, and cheap, but they had a model for them, and it only worked so well for them. Has NASA, let me rephrase it, has the government been neutral, supportive, or a hindrance?
I think overall, much more supportive than maybe we thought they would be in the 80s. excuse me. But yeah, we've had personally the business plan competition has had great support from NASA. In fact, they used to give us prizes once upon a time, a program that has now been retired. But you know, we see a lot of active work on the NASA side to improve the SBIR system and get more money into the hands of small businesses. Obviously, there's been a lot of initiatives by NASA that we think have been really helpful to the ecosystem overall, and I see them continuing to really look to support the small businesses and the startup businesses through a lot of the stuff that Tech Transfer Office is doing and such. So I think that they've been incredibly helpful. I think that there's a kind of great attitude in Washington in general right now towards space commercialization, regardless of the administration that's been going on for a couple of years. So I don't want to say that it's administration specific, but just the kind of general attitude in Washington has been positive and favorable. And I see some similar changes happening around the world. Obviously, there's some great examples of Luxembourg and Dubai and the UK, where there's specific initiatives to support space startups that we find to just be extremely valuable. So, you know, we think governments do still have a very big role to play in the space industry, but of course we are most excited by the governments who help support small business because we think that's the best, you know, economic investment they can be making.
Jerry's in Denver, and he said the annual SmallSat conference, which is held in Logan, Utah, every August, has hovered around 500 or so people, 600 people, for years and years and years. But over the last 4 years to 5 years, it has really started to grow unbelievably to way over 2,500 with expanded facilities, coverage at Utah State, and everything. I think this is indicative of how the commercial industry is changing to smaller, faster, cheaper commercial satellites, small sats, nanosats, etc. Is this directly representative to the business plan community? It seems to me they're running in parallel, although I don't know how many business plans are making use of something out of the satellite industry.
Yeah, that's great. So I was just in Logan, Utah, and I'm keenly aware of the housing shortage because Logan, Utah is not set up to take in 2,500 people for a week in the middle of the summer. So, it is fantastic the way that particular conference has grown, and I think several others can kind of boast similar growth in numbers as well. And I think that it is very indicative of how quickly the industry is going. And in fact, I spent most of the time at SmallSat walking around handing out flyers for the business plan competition, because I think a lot of the teams that are there would be perfect competitors. So I think there is definitely some great overlap there.
As part of Jeremy's question, are you seeing plans come in that sort of focus on SmallSats, imaging, things of that nature?
Yes, we saw over the last few years, we've seen quite a few of those. So imaging is not so much what we're seeing anymore. Now we're seeing kind of different types of instrumentation doing different types of things using small sats, and that's really exciting to see people come up with new and exciting ideas on how to use the technology for more than just taking pictures.
And so that part of the industry seems to be doing really well, then, I would imagine.
Yeah, and I think that everybody agrees that it's going really well. There's lots of growth there, and I think there's lots of possibilities for new markets to be created. Obviously, there are other issues. There are issues with spectrum and orbits and debris and all sorts of other things that come with low Earth orbit being so crowded. There's a lot of things still left to be solved there. But I do believe there is still quite a bit of opportunity and room for business growth in low Earth orbit small sat.
Karen's in Santa Monica, and she says, does your competition have a student program or variation to it?
We are working on putting a student program together. Students are not prohibited from participating in the existing program, and in fact, we have had several student groups come through. But we will be, hopefully in the near future, putting together a program for students. We're looking to do a NASA commercialization challenge, so asking students to take a NASA patent and figure out how to commercialize it, something to that effect. It's still early days, but we are working on putting together something specifically for students to kind of help feed them into the business plan competition.
I'm curious, as anyone has ever submitted a business plan for something to do with Department of Defense or a space weapon or anything like that? Have you ever seen that?
We have. We've seen all sorts of kinds of submissions for all sorts of things, some crazier than others, some lazier than others. We had one person copy and paste the entire Wikipedia page for the word warp drive and submit that as a business plan competition entry. We've seen all sorts of stuff, we've definitely seen.
Was that a serious entry, or were they just joking around?
I don't know. They actually filled out the form and submitted it as a PDF. It must have taken them a few minutes to do that, so I think they were trying to be serious. I don't know.
And I'm assuming they didn't win anything.
No, they were not asked to compete, though.
You have another email from Bijan, who is in Sweden. And he says, he's broadening the conversation a little bit. What do you think of the financial viability of the so-called space tourism for SpaceX Big Falcon rocket? Some guy, it said to have booked a trip and now probably most interested in the return of himself than the return of his investment. Do you think there will be a rush for space tourism now? I guess he's talking about the Japanese tourist that has recently been announced as going to do some sort of an orbit around the moon.
I think that tourism will be a thing. I don't know that it's going to ever be a huge part of the market. I think that we've got a ways to go. I think it's going to need to be proven to be very reliable, very safe, consistently good product. You know what I mean? It's fun. It's exciting. People aren't don't have any sort of medical issues from participating. So, you know, I think there's kind of a lot to be proven there before it widens up to a larger market. Obviously, you're going to have early adopters. Obviously, you're going to have people that are so excited that they don't care about the danger. They don't care about the risk. But that's a limited pool of people. And so if you really want to open it up to a wider market, it's going to have to be safe, reliable, and the cost, of course, is going to have to come down significantly. But I do think that that is going to be a part of the market in the future. And I think that once we have a foothold with tourism, settlement's not far behind. So I am excited to see us moving that direction.
Do you see business plans for space settlement?
Not so much. We do see business plans for technologies and ideas and pieces that can help lead to space settlement. But no, we've not received a business plan for a space hotel or a space colony quite yet.
So once the competition is over with at the New Worlds Conference, say the middle of November, what does your organization do after that? Does it go into the mode to organize the 2019 competition? Or tell us a little bit about the CSCF organization.
That's a great question. Actually, as soon as we finish the business plan competition in Austin in November, we'll be switching gears because we're doing an educational event called a Space Investment Summit in Luxembourg at the end of November. That Space Investment Summit is it's also an educational program, but it's kind of on the other side. Instead of educating entrepreneurs, we use those programs to educate investors, people who are experienced investors, experienced startup investors, but don't yet have the familiarity with the space industry that they would want or need in order to start making investments, and so we help bridge that gap for them. So we do have kind of, besides the business plan competitions, we're doing space investment summits. We'll have a couple of those planned for 2019. And then in 2019, we are confirmed to have four different business plan competitions next year. We'll definitely, after the event in November, we'll be going into the mode to prepare for those four competitions next year, because that's quite a bit.
Who is part of the organization, and can other people support it or join it, or what can you tell us exactly about the organization?
That's great. So right now we're a small team. We have an executive director named Aaron Pagel. He's just absolutely fantastic. And a board of directors that includes Tom Olson, who I know has been on your show many times, several times with me. And we've got Jeff Krukin, Michael Lane, and Bob Werb on the board as well. Aaron, our executive director, is currently helping us recruit some new volunteers. So anybody who wants to help, we would just absolutely love to have you. Do the contact button on our website and let us know that you want to help. And we've got plenty of stuff to do, whether you just want to spend a little bit of, donate a little bit of time working from home, whether you want to come and participate in the event, whether you want to sponsor or participate in a financial way. Just let us know. We'd love to have you.
Do you see... does the support come in on the business side, or do you want the aerospace engineers, or a little bit of everything?
We need everybody to make the industry work. You got to have all kinds, right? So, we definitely, anybody who's interested in, our goal, and maybe I should have kind of led with this, our goal is to catalyze the expansion of humanity into space through the use of free enterprise, through business. So So we educate both investors and entrepreneurs. We connect investors and entrepreneurs, and we help catalyze those new businesses to get them started and to get them producing products and revenue that bring in more investors and more new companies. So if that sounds exciting to you, give us a call, shoot us an email. We'd love to hear from you. We'd love to have your help.
Got a couple more questions from you. Barbara is in Scottsdale, and she says, I keep getting emails and I see news articles from time to time about companies that are in the virtual reality business and doing something in space. What is your take on that? Are you seeing virtual reality show up in the business plan? Is this a big segment or a growing segment?
I think we've had two companies in the last couple of years that had a virtual reality element to them. And so, you know, this is something that we have seen. I wouldn't say that it's a huge part of what we're seeing, but I do think it's a great kind of mid-step between here and tourism that we were just talking about that gets people interested and excited in space. You've got a good terrestrial market for. So I do think there will be some continued activity there for sure.
And I have another one, Paul, and Paul is in Maryland. And he said there is always today a lot of talk and articles about deep space mining and the companies that are involved. Mm-hmm. So when a company submits its executive plan, does it have to have a near-term ROI? Because, for example, deep space mining could be years and years off into the future, certainly not near-term. So how do you work with near-term versus very long-term for the business plan?
That's a great question. So the process that we have in place is set up to mimic the real-world activities of fundraising. And in the real world, especially with a venture capitalist, which is kind of the target imaginary investor that we use for the process and the program, from a venture capital perspective, they need to see returns in 5 to 7 years. This is one of the reasons that the mining companies have other products and other services that they're offering along the way, so that they can start to provide some return to their investors on a time frame that's more realistic for you know, that investment class. So, space mining is going to be outside the purview of most investors, but that doesn't mean that you can't have a space mining company that finds other ways to make money with the kind of mid-steps of the products that you produce, the spacecraft that you produce, the information that you gather. There's ways to create revenue along the way so that you can fit better into that ROI model that the investors are looking for.
So for the business plan competition, you would be looking at ROI models of the 5 to 7 year range.
That's what we suggest. As I mentioned earlier, there's a couple blog posts that go over the specifics of creating an executive summary and the specifics of the judging criteria. And we do recommend a 5 to 7 year time frame for doing your financial projections, etc. Now, that's not a hard and fast rule. If I get to huge profitability in year 8, so I'm going to extend mine out to year 8, that's fine. But we do find that, especially based on what our judging criteria are, that companies who have a good ROI in that 5 to 7 year time frame are going to be more successful.
Sally's in Los Angeles, and she said, I'm glad I caught this program. I'm a business school student at USC, and I do follow space, and I see more and more in the Los Angeles area, maybe it's elsewhere too, businesses for space with a niche or some kind of a lure using cryptocurrency as their catch point. I'm not sure how serious all this is or how vital it is, or even if it's going to work out over the long run, but are you seeing business plans coming in using cryptocurrency or anything like that?
That's a great question. So we have seen, I think it was actually just our last competition, there was one that had a blockchain element to it. There may have been one or two more. I am definitely aware of several pretty serious businesses with pretty serious funding that are doing some really exciting things in this area. I think that it's going to continue to develop as the crypto world develops, as different types of financial instruments develop in that world. I expect to see that democratization and ease of financing really help the space industry over time, just as simply a funding source, if nothing else. I also believe that blockchain technology has a lot of great uses when it comes to security and ownership and identification of assets. And I do think that there's a lot of opportunities in that world, and we are starting to see some of those trickle through the business plan competition for sure.
A question I have, are you starting to see any business plans that have gotten initial funding or maybe a really early family, friends, something like that, through the equity crowdfunding possibilities on the equity side for crowdfunding?
So I don't think so. There's not any that come to mind off the top of my head. That doesn't say that they don't exist. I maybe just don't remember.
Okay. George is in Atlanta, and he says, I'm graduating from high school this year, and I want to study business, but I'm also interested in space. So for months, I've been looking at business schools that have a space component to them or space programs that have a commercial space component to them. I'm stunned at how many business schools and aerospace schools have commercial space or business components. This is really different over the last several years. So I'm wondering if you're seeing this show up in, say, the quality of business plans. Have people been coming in who actually have business training, have written business plans, even if nothing more than for school projects or even engineering projects where they've had engineering for business classes? Is that showing up? It just seems to me there's been a proliferation of these topics and subjects in both business and aerospace engineering schools.
Yeah, that's a great, great observation. And in fact, more than a decade ago, we'll just leave it at that, not go any more specific with it, when I was looking for my master's program, no such programs existed. So I've been really pleased to see them popping up here and there. And in fact, we are partnering with the University of Texas at Austin, their space commercialization master's program, hoping to get a couple of their folks in to this competition, since we're going to be right on campus there at UT. But yes, we've definitely seen an uptick in the quality of what we're receiving, and we are seeing a lot of people that are coming out of university programs that, frankly, I'm very jealous didn't exist when I was looking for them. So, yeah, that's absolutely true.
Yeah, I will second that, George, because when I started teaching at the University of North Dakota maybe 10 years ago, you could count the schools on less than one hand. Ah, Megan, I lost you again. What the hell's with her phone? Anyway, maybe she can still hear. I don't know. But there are now so many educational opportunities. It is not even funny. You know, we're at the end of our hour for Megan. Let me see if I can get her back to see if she has any concluding comments. So, listeners, stand by for just a minute now. I'll see if I can quickly get her back for concluding comments. Listeners, we're back with Megan, and Megan, we are at the end of the hour, so what should we have mentioned or brought up or talked about that we forgot or didn't do? And takeaways, pearls of wisdom, what would you like us to hold on to today?
I guess the most important thing, and I'm not sure if I actually mentioned this earlier, is that the deadline for this round of applications is 1 week from today. So
okay.
Next Friday, September 28th, I think it's at midnight central to get those applications in. And as I said, it's a three-page executive summary, and we have some great blogs on our website that will walk you through step-by-step what to include. There's even an example Word document that you can use and just kind of change the information to be specific for your company. So there's a lot of great tools there on the website to help you build that executive summary and also to go over the judging criteria so that you know what the judges are looking for. So do take a look at those blogs and spend the next couple of days writing us an executive summary. We would absolutely love to hear about your business.
Okay, and so they need to get it in by midnight Central Time a week from today.
Correct.
Okay. Anything we should have talked about that we didn't?
No, I think we hit all the high points, and these were great questions. Thank you, everybody, for writing in.
Okay. Megan, good to talk to you again, and thank you very much for being with us. And listeners, again, on Sunday, the Mill Irons are back with Inner Orbital, so you don't want to miss their update. They're actually flying rockets now, so that's a big step forward for Inner Orbital. Everybody have a great weekend coming up, and the Space Show thanks Megan Crawford and those of you who sent in emails. Keep looking up, everybody. It's going to be a great weekend. Goodbye from Megan, David, and the Space Show.